This program is designed to provide general information with regards to the subject matters covered. This information is given with the understanding that neither the hosts, guests, sponsors, or station are engaged in rendering any specific and personal medical, financial, legal, counseling, professional service, or any advice. You should seek the services of competent professionals before applying or trying any suggested ideas.
Good morning and welcome to K4HD Radio. This is the Your Living Brand Live show. My name is Ben Baker. This show is all about how you communicate value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Over the next 50 minutes, we will explore different ways to help you demonstrate your uniqueness and ask our guest, what's your story? Welcome to the show. Good morning, everybody. It's Ben Baker and this is Your Living Brand Live show. It's 10 o'clock in the morning on the West Coast. It is August the 7th. How did it get to be August? It is an absolutely incredible how fast this year has gone. You know, I want to start the show by shouting out to Rebel, my wonderful sound engineer. She's incredible as per always. You, my incredible audience, for listening in every single week. You know, we're up to 110 or 112 episodes already. And I am impressed every week by the questions that I get, the responses that I get offline, and, you know, the communication I get from my audience. So I absolutely thank each and every one of you guys for everything that you contribute, your listening and your interest. And this week, I've got a phenomenal guest. Damian Brown comes to me from Valley Forge Captive Advisors. Yes, I got another person in the insurance business, but this is something that's completely different. Captive insurance is something, if you're a large organization or a medium to large size organization, this is something you really need to be looking at. It's different, it's unique. And you know what? It's going to save the right organization a lot of money. So before I bring Damian on board, I wanted to have a conversation with you guys because I'm almost finished researching my book. I have to start writing it in the next couple weeks. I think the end of August is when I'm actually going to sit down and start writing it because hopefully I'm heading to Australia. If not, I'm taking some time off. And if I make it to Australia, I'm just waiting on the contracts right now. I'm going to be going down there to do some workshops and some keynote addresses. And for the next 4 or 5 weeks, I'm going to have some episodes pre-recorded for you guys, just in case one way or the other. But what is amazing to me with my book, and I'm doing my research on it, and it's called Humanizing Your Corporate Brand. The one thing I started doing a lot of research on is on onboarding. Onboarding is something for organizations that is so overlooked. And that's the process from the minute you hire the person, getting them ramped up the first week, the first 2 weeks, the first month that a person is with you, to make sure they understand the corporate culture, make sure they understand the brand, make sure they meet all the right people, that they understand the mission and vision of the company, and that everything goes well. And I'm willing to tell you guys from the research that I'm doing, how few companies do it right. And let me give you a perfect example. And this just blew me away. The number of companies that fully admit, you know, what is, you know, what I asked them, I says, when a new employee walks into their office on the first day, how many of those offices have been used as a storage room for the last month, 2 months, 3 months, 5 months while you're, you know, replacing that person? And all those boxes are sitting there lined up. And the answer is, you know, way too many. How does that make people feel? How does that make people feel when you walk in your office for the very first time and your office is not clean? It's not organized. It's got boxes everywhere. It's got spare furniture everywhere. How does that make you feel? Conversely, when you walk in the office the very first day, and this is something you're hearing more often than not, the actual vice president of human resources or whoever is supposed to be walking you through the first day of the office forgot that you were actually coming in that day and has booked other meetings. It's not even in the office. How does that make you feel when you walk in and you spend the first hour or hour and a half within the organization people stammering around, figuring out who's supposed to take care of you, who's supposed to bring you up to speed, who's supposed to get your office ready, your computer ready, your phone ready, all those type of things. And if those aren't organized the first day, you know, that you're there, you're going to go home. And the first thing a spouse or a parent or whoever's going to ask you is, how was your first day at the office? And you're going to tell them. You're either going to say fine and, you know, leave it at that. And, you know, in the back of your mind, sit there going, well, that really wasn't fine. And I really didn't feel welcome. And I really didn't feel special. Or you're actually going to tell somebody. And if you start enunciating how you actually feel about that company and you start thinking about it, whether it's verbally or internally or whatever, you already have one foot out the door. You're already thinking, why did I really come work for? Is this really where I want to work? If these people didn't have enough wherewithal to make me feel special the first day that I walked in the door, to feel welcome, to feel part of the crew, to do whatever, you know, why do I want to hang around? Did I really make the right decision? And is this the company I want to invest my time and my effort and my energy in? And that question starts nagging at you on day two, on day three, and day four, and day five. And if things don't get better and get better quickly, you know, you are already out there looking to sit there and say, all right, who's next? What's next? What are we doing? You know, we need to start thinking about that as employees. How simple is it to have policies and procedures in place? There's somebody there the first day whose job it is to walk this person around, to make sure that their office is clean and organized, to make sure that their computer and their phones are set up, to make sure that they're introduced to the right people, to make sure that whoever they're going to be working with, that a lunch has been scheduled with those people to be able to have some type of a bonding thing. And here's a simple thing. How simple is it to have 500 business cards sitting on this person's desk the first day with their name and their title on it? You know what? For the $50 it costs or $40 that it costs to get that done, it makes people feel special that they're not waiting 6 or 8 weeks for business cards. And people, you know, when they walk in and they walk to a new person, they say, well, can I have one of your business cards? They say, oh, we don't have, they're not printed yet. They're not printed yet. They should be there the first day. It makes people feel that they're part of the team. It makes people feel that they're welcome. And another thing is, if you have promotional marketing pieces, have them on their desk. Have a sweatshirt in their size. Have a coffee mug. Have a water bottle. Have a hat. Whatever you do, you know, I have seen some incredible Instagram pictures that are worth $1 million of people who, you know, walk into their office and their business cards are laid out and they've got 3 or 4 promotional product items sitting on their desk. And they take a picture of this and say, first day of work, I am so excited to be there. And that goes out to their Instagram followers, their Twitter followers, their Facebook followers, their LinkedIn followers. They send it out to everybody because they feel welcome. And they went, you know what? This is where I want to work because they thought of me my first day at the office. They thought that I was special enough to have something, a small gift. And it doesn't have to be much. But just something to know that people are thinking that, you know, welcome to our office, welcome to be part of our team, welcome to be part of it, and we value you, and we want you to feel that you are part of us from day one. You know, those are the little things that most companies are not doing. And why? Does your first day of the office have to be a full day of filling out forms and triplicates? And yes, it really happens that way in most companies. You know, the software is out there to write it out once and have it, you know, have it push out to every single one of the programs so it just self-populates, or have the majority of the information already populated within the system. So by the time the employee gets in there, all they have to do is fill in 2 or 3 little things. Why does somebody want to fill out their name, their social insurance number, their address, their mother's name, their, you know, their security contract? All those people 6 or 7 times on their first day of the office. Is that really a productive use of somebody's time when technology can do that in a matter of seconds? You know, these are things we need to think about. Are we making people feel welcome? Are we making people feel special? Are we giving people the opportunity to be brand ambassadors for us? because when people feel special, when they feel they're part of the team, when they feel that their individual effort matters, they talk about the company they work for. And they're proud of the company they work for, and they work harder for the company that they work for. And they bring in people like them into the company because they sit there and say, you know what, I work for company X, you gotta come and work for us, because you know what, they really take care of us and they make us feel special and they do the little things to make us feel like we're part of the team. You know, those are the things we need to be thinking about. And if we're not doing that, it's really, really a shame. And we're giving people a reason to walk out the door. And all that money that you spent and all that time that you spent on, you know, reading resumes and getting the process done and hiring an HR consultant and, you know, getting people, you know, hired, all that money is for nothing. Because guess what? You're going to be doing it again in 6 months, because those people are not going to stay. Now, let's take a break. Let's go out for a commercial. When we come back, there's a couple questions for the audience. I'm going to answer those, and then we're going to bring Damien on board. We'll be right back.
This is Ben Baker of the You're Living Brand Live show on K4HD Radio. We'll be right back.
The You're Living Brand show is brought to you by Your Brand Marketing. Did you know that the world views your brand not as you desire, but as it relates to them? That's why you need to communicate your brand. Tell a story. Win loyalty. Your Brand Marketing helps you reach that goal. It's time to stop being a commodity and instead be a brand worth loving. It's time to contact Your Brand Marketing. Please visit www.powerfulpersonalbrands.com. Download a free chapter of the book on personal branding. That's www.powerfulpersonalbrands.com. Download your free copy now.
Welcome back to K4HD Radio. This is Ben Baker, and this is the Your Living Brand Live Show.
And before I bring Damien on board, I got two questions, one from Donald and one from Jeremy. Donald, what's taking me to another country? I'm going to Australia, and I'm going to be doing some workshops and some keynote addresses on internal communication. I help companies communicate more effectively internally and getting people to understand, you know, their value and how to work together to be able to be more effective. You know, it's about building company culture, and it's about building leaders at every level. And Jeremy, you want to know, when you speak up, who do you speak up to and who is going to listen? You know what? It's speaking up in a way that is, you know, productive. It's not complaining. It's about sitting there going, you know what? This is, you know, what about this? And what about this? And asking questions in a polite way and sitting there going, you know, what are we trying to do? What is the objective? What is our mission? What is our vision statement? What are we trying to achieve? How do I fit into this program? And what can I do to make things better? And if you can do that to the leaders within your organization, whether it's the HR department, the CEO, the CFO, anybody within the organization, you know what? People will listen. They will respect you. And if they're, you know, if the company is a good company, they're going to answer those questions. And if they can answer those questions, you need to start thinking about, is that the place you want to be? Because if people can't communicate, you know, if people can't communicate their mission and vision in a way that you understand it and you can buy into it, how are you ever going to live it? So let's go to Damien. Damien, welcome to the show.
Ben, good morning. Thank you for having me.
I am so excited to have you. How have you been today?
I've been fantastic, Ben. The weather is perfect over here in the East Coast. It's the middle of the afternoon, and I'm a couple hours ahead of you.
There we go.
So, everybody, hey, thanks for tuning in today. I'm Damien Brown with Valley Forge Captive Advisors. We are just outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. What we do is we help well-performing, safety-conscious, middle-market companies take control of their insurance costs by exiting the standard insurance market and becoming part owner of their own quote-unquote captive insurance company with other well-performing organizations. That's us in a nutshell.
Okay, now let's unpack that.
Okay.
Because, you know what, I understood that. But, you know, I have a good understanding of the insurance market. So let's get down to this. It says, you work with who? Is it more mid-sized companies or large-sized companies?
We define it as middle market, Ben. Which can be defined in a number of ways. But generally for us, you know, it's companies in the $20 million to $350 million a year revenue range. I mean, we have a couple clients that are close to $1 billion in certain industries where there's a concentration of risk and a large insurable interest. We have clients that earn as little as $5 to $10 million in revenue. But generally, that $20 to $350 million is our sweet spot.
Right. And the biggest challenge that these guys have is that, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that they're paying more in premiums than they're collecting, you know, from claims. Is that on a regular basis?
That's correct. If you break down an insurance premium into its simplest components, Ben, you have your total premium. You have within that you have the operating costs of the insurance company to keep the lights on, have their people, whatever. You have claims dollars that go out to pay claims, and then you have profits. For some clients, definitely not all. Believe it or not, the vast majority of businesses do not produce an underwriting profit for insurance companies. Only roughly about a quarter to a third do. However, the insurance companies still manage to make a good buck because they're collecting massive amounts of insurance premium and making investment income and earning money on the float.
Sure. It's the McDonald's principle. You're not going to make any money off any particular person, but you're going to make it off the overall selling a billion hamburgers, right?
That is correct. What we're looking to do is we're looking to connect with the folks that the large insurance carriers are actually earning an underwriting profit on, that 25 to 30% of any given market. We're looking for the best performers who have developed a strong culture of safety, have good loss controls in place, and have more or less driven their premiums down as much as they can or as much as they can within their control, and now are more or less just subject to market fluctuations and the whim of the insurance carrier. What we're looking to do is we're looking to take them out of the traditional insurance programs and put them in a program, a captive insurance program, with other well-performing organizations so that they can become part owner of their risk management program and be the recipient of those underwriting profits going forward.
Gotcha. So what we're talking about is we're talking about workers' compensation insurance. We're probably talking about health insurance. Is there any type of other insurance that is part of this overall process, or?
Yeah, so what I do day in, day out is workers' comp, general liability, and auto programs.
Okay.
We also do have captive programs for health insurance. Some of the details and the way they work and the way distributions are paid are a little bit different, but high level, the concept is the same. Certain lines of insurance, like property insurance or employment practices liability, cyber liability, those generally are not included in group captives. However, if you're an organization of significant scale, individual captive programs for a specific organization can be set up to cover those risks. Generally, those are reserved for the Fortune 500 companies and companies of that size.
Gotcha. So when you're dealing with this, you're dealing with the type of insurance that is, for the most part, predictable. I mean, you're able to sit there when you're dealing with, you know, when you're dealing with fleet insurance, you know, there are averages that you can work with and say, okay, this company is below the average in terms of claims, you know, within the policy. Workers' compensation, this company is below the average level of claim, so therefore the rating gets higher. Am I understanding that correctly?
That's correct. Workers' comp, in particular, is actuarially predictable, primarily based on any given individual's past performance. You know, it's relatively easy for us to determine upfront if an organization is going to be a fit for a captive based on their past performance and their prior loss history, particularly the number of small repetitive type claims they have. If someone is having constant back strains or wrist injuries, there's probably a problem in their process that needs to be engineered out before they would become a member of a captive insurance program. Now, everyone understands most businesses are going to have catastrophic losses, one or two somewhere in the life of their business, you know, the loss of a limb, God forbid a death.
Right.
But the captive programs are structured in such a way to protect any individual business from those catastrophic losses so they don't have more exposure than their business can bear.
Gotcha. So the insurance, these are like a collective. So all you do is you're putting together a group of companies that all have better than average insurance claim process. They're low risk. They're paying probably more premiums than they need to be. They're low maintenance in terms of the overall average. So you're putting these companies together outside of a traditional insurance plan. And having them, is it basically self-insuring?
To a degree. Our clients are taking on a little bit more risk than they would in the standard insurance market, but they're not making the full leap into self-insurance.
Okay.
And I always say, Ben, you know, a little bit of calculated risk is no risk at all. Again, when we do a look-back analysis and a five-year look-back for all of our prospects, actuarially speaking, by making the move into a captive for many of them, it's literally no risk at all or very, very little risk. What we're doing then is we're going forward is we're putting them with like organizations and insulating them from market conditions. And we're developing pricing that is based on their own loss experience, not industry rates or even experience mods. So it really is disruptive, in my opinion. It's innovative. Believe it or not, it's not that new. This has been going on for, you know, two decades or so at this point. But the vast majority of potential candidates for group captive insurance have no idea that this the service of this product exists, which is one of the reasons I got into this business.
Right. So how would you start the process? I mean, If I'm a company, you know, out there that falls within your 30 to 200 million, you know, and I'm just paying insurance.
Mm-hmm.
I talk to my insurance broker, you know, once a year or twice a year, whatever I talk to them, you know, I pay my premiums, I do this. You know, why would a company or an individual sit there and say, you know, is there a better way and what is it? And, you know, how would I go about even figuring out what the process to get involved in something like this?
Sure thing, Ben. Typically, we're dealing with the CFO okay. of any given organization. And there's two types of CFOs out there, I find. One who really wants to drive value and find efficiencies and do better all around in their organization. And the other is one who just simply doesn't want to break anything.
Yes, I've run into both.
You know, the second's a little harder to convince, but for folks who are looking to do better for their organization and find efficiencies, workers' comp in particular, but any liability insurance is something they're always dealing with. They're getting rate increases that aren't explained clearly to them. They feel like they're not in control. If an individual wants to take control of their risk management program and their insurance cost, a captive insurance program is a great place to look. Generally, where that begins is a conversation about their losses, We ask, hey, do you think you're better than average? Is your insurance company making money off of you? More often than not, the answer to both questions is yes.
Or I don't know.
Yes. We go into a little bit of a deeper dive about the mechanism of the captives, the commitments, what risk is involved. I'll concede it's not that much, but there are downsides. And then we do an analysis of their losses and give, you know, let the numbers tell the story for themselves. To be completely honest, Ben, there really isn't a hard sell at the end of this sales process. It's more or less numbers on a spreadsheet, and they tell the story and make the decision 80 to 90% of the time.
Perfect. So the word you keep using is risk. You know, whether it's a large risk, a small risk, there's still, you know, the consideration of risk. And most CFOs that I've ever met are risk adverse. You know, one way or the other, they are risk adverse. So how do you go about having the communication with them about risk? Because, you know, unknown is risky. You know, moving from one process to another is risky because it's not just dollars and cents. It's how is it going to affect the company and how is it going to affect the people within the company? You know, are people going to be better off? Are people going to be worse off? Is it going to change, you know, the advantages that people have with their insurance policies that they have right now? You know, what are the things that you know, the top five questions that a CFO would ask you dealing with risk that you would have to, you know, that you'd have to alleviate?
Sure. Well, one is we're talking a lot about the upside. You know, the upside is the potential to reduce your premiums on a cash flow basis and then receive dividends of 25, 30, up to 60% of your premium back over time.
Right.
Obviously, that's something we like to mention up front. You know, so they'll ask, what are the downsides? Is there a potential scenario where I would have to pay in more? Another downside is, well, what if this thing goes belly up? Who's on the hook? Do I have to share risk with all of the other members in the captive? The answer to the first question, what are the downsides, is simply is there are situations where a member could pay in more premium after a policy year ends if they have a frequency issue. So the way the captive is structured is, for the most part, members are responsible for small dollar losses, depending on the captive, up to $100,000 or $150,000 in loss. And then losses above that are partially covered by their premium, but then covered by reinsurance the captive collectively purchases to protect from those extraordinarily large losses that you really can't prevent, but everyone's going to have at least a couple of times in the life of their business.
So that's like a stopgap insurance to say, oh my God, if the claim gets over $500,000 or $1 million or $5 million or whatever the number is agreed to, there's insurance to cover that.
That is correct. That is correct. And that's for each individual member and the captive as a whole. So another question is, am I on the hook for other members' losses? And to a degree, yes, which is why the captives look for best-in-class companies to join. However, actuarially speaking, what we call shifting and sharing, the helping to fund other members' losses before reinsurance kicks in, accounts for 4 to 5% of any given member's premium in a year. You can expect that there'll always be some shifting and sharing. Coincidentally, though, the investment income generated from their premium averages about 5 to 6%. So what little shifting and sharing does occur is offset by investment income. And another strength of the group captive format is also that each year stands on its own. So in an absolute worst case scenario, all the members have a bad year, the world blows up, and the captive becomes insolvent, which has never happened with any of our captives. But in theory, the captive cannot go back into prior year's earnings to assess members to pay for losses that year, and plus the reinsurance that's in place will covers over the total stopgap limit for the captive. Okay. So it's a pretty solid mechanism that's tried and true. And the key comes down to, you know, the underwriting up front and finding the right people, educating them that this is a fit for them, and then including the right people, but only the right people.
So let's take this away from a dollars and cents point of view and move it into more of a human point of view. Mm-hmm. Because it's not just the CFO that's making this decision. I mean, the CFO may sit there and say, from a dollar and cents position, absolutely this makes sense. Mm-hmm. But the question is, how does this affect the average person within the company? Because you're dealing with their workers' compensation claims, and all these people want to make sure that, God forbid, if something happens, that they're covered. You're dealing with, you know, with the fleet insurance, and if there's an accident, that human beings are made whole, you know, as whole as humanly can be again. Life insurance the same way, is to make sure that the individuals within the company are being taken care of and that they're not losing out on benefits that they had in a regular insurance system, you know, because of this is a cheaper thing. And I'm sure you must get a lot of pushback on that level. So I'm curious about, you know, that the human side of this, and how are the, you know, and how is that handled?
So, Ben, you ask great questions. You should consider getting into this business. Or I'd love to sit at opposite sides of the table with you one day. So it's a very good question. Well,
happy to have that conversation. You guys got to fly me out to Philly. How's that?
All right.
We'll have a
cheesesteak
together.
Took the words out of my mouth. How are the employees affected? Well, I'll use workers' comp as an example. So in every captive, there is a policy issuance carrier and a reinsurer. Sometimes they're one and the same, typically Zurich. Some captives have different carriers. Nevertheless, the policy issuance carrier is actually the captive actually hires a standard market insurance carrier to issue the policy on their paper.
Okay.
So, for instance, the captive will pay Zurich to use their policy copy and their policy forms to issue policies to the captive client or the captive member. And those are the terms and conditions used to pay out claims, just like a regular insurance policy. Also, when certificates of insurance are issued, so say there's a general contractor, which we have many of as clients, and they need to issue certificates of insurance to their developer or their client, the certificates will actually list the policy issuance carrier, whether it's Zurich, Travelers, etc., not necessarily the name of the captive. So no one even needs to know that you're in a captive, or people don't have to worry about their clients asking, well, what is this Churchill or Mac or Catalyst? I never heard of that. It's the policy issuance carrier that's on the paper. And then, of course, the reinsurer is in place to protect from extraordinary losses and pay down to dollar one if, in theory, the captive blows up at some point down the road. Okay. So claims are paid and policies are issued and notification is distributed just like they're in a regular insurance policy. However, one area that is significantly enhanced for the end user, for the worker on the floor, the health insurance recipient, is the culture of the organization that's in the captive. We've been talking a lot about the mechanism of how the captive works and how the dollars and cents work out. Part of the reason the dollars and cents work out and that the members who enter these captives continue to be the right people to be in them is the commitment and culture of safety that is developed and continuously improved upon once they're in. There are board member meetings where CFOs all come together or owners of the company come together to make management decisions on the captive at these board meetings, they're sharing best practices. And a little bit of competition evolves and people want to do better than some of their peers in the captive. So there's a lot of knowledge sharing going on and techniques, often even within the same industry, that people are employing on their shop floor or in their workplace to bring down their claims and eliminate hazards. In addition to the board meetings, all captives have at least one multi-day risk control workshop, typically in a nice place like San Diego, somewhere in Florida or Texas, where the owners and CFOs don't attend these. They send their top risk control people, possibly someone from HR, to go learn best practices and techniques on claims management, risk control, and safety processes.
Right.
It's go on year after year, and you can see it over time in their erosion of their premium, that they really are effective. And the claims do come down over time once people join captives, because if they thought they had their eye on the ball before they joined the captive, they really have their eye on the ball now that they have a significant vested interest and are owners of the captive company.
Right. I mean, so there's vested interest to work together as a collective to bring everybody's risk down. And have best practices that are shared amongst all the members of the organization to be able to make sure that the systems go down. I remember I used to work, one of the companies I used to do work for was a company called Mar Terminals, which is out of New Jersey. They're worldwide. And they used to spend $1 million a year on their safety program. And I asked the Mr. Marr why he spent so much, he invested so much on a safety program. He says, really simple, Ben. He says, for every $1 million that I spend on safety, I get an $8 million return on my investment. He says, in lower claims and fewer sick days and fewer shutdowns and all the things that go along with it, they figured for every $1 million he spent, they reaped $8 million in true benefit. And it's being able to share that information across a collective helps bring everybody's rates down, I guess, and therefore makes it more attractive when you're renegotiating year after year with the insurance companies, or I guess when Valley Forge, renegotiates on behalf of the collective, to be able to sit there and say, you know what, they brought their safety down even further. Hey, what's the better rate you're going to give them now?
That's correct. I mean, the reinsurance, the policy issuance, risk control, claims management services, those are all overhead costs the captives incur that are constantly up for renegotiating. Now, those overhead costs only account for roughly 30% of their premium, but again,
still 30%.
That's right. Our clients are owners. They want to keep those as low as possible and do as well as they can. Plus, as I mentioned earlier, our clients' premiums are based on their own loss history, not experience mods or industry class codes. So since it's based on their own history, the more they improve their loss ratios, the more their own premium comes down. So it's an interesting phenomenon in this business. We call it the constant erosion of premium. As people enter the captives, they tend to do better over time, which not only enables them to receive significant dividends and a large portion of their premium back over time, but reduces their actual annual premium year over year. So that presents a challenge for us as brokers to find more quality members to join the captive, but it works out very, very well for our clients.
And that brings a question I have for my audience. Walter asks, do you provide coverage for companies outside of your local area? Because my assumption is, you would probably have to look at, national level clients to be able to, bring enough, clients on board to enable to make a collective, or are you able to find enough, people that you only have to do the business in the greater Philly area?
Now, Walter, was it?
Yes.
Walter, thank you for asking. No, we're all over the United States. We have large concentration of clients here in Eastern Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, but we're in California, Texas, New England, you name it. The only four states we don't have much business in are the four workers' comp monopolistic states, Washington, Wyoming, Ohio, and North Dakota. And that's because the state controls workers' comp there.
As it does here, up in British Columbia.
Yes.
Yeah, the state controls workers' comp. So they're you know, either you buy it from them or you buy it from them. You know, those are your two choices.
That's exactly right. So no, we'll go anywhere. We don't mind getting out and getting in front of people. We have heterogeneous and homogeneous captives. Ben, heterogeneous are industry agnostic. They will more or less accept any company in any industry, excluding a few industries that they pre-select, such as roofing, ambulance companies, things like that. But then we also have homogeneous captives for those industries that are difficult to place in the heterogeneous captives, and those are industry-specific. So we have one for contractors. We have one for ambulance companies. We actually have one for tree trimmers and roofers. So no matter what your business is, no matter where you're at, if you have the scale and the loss history, chances are we have a captive you can call home.
All right. So you guys act as a traditional broker in the sense of you guys are out there finding the best way for your clients to be insured. You know, you're understanding the needs of instead of understanding the needs of one particular company, you're understanding the overall greater needs of the collective and negotiating on the collective's behalf with the insurance companies to be able to get the policies in place. Is that correct?
Partially. So we are brokers, and we are working on behalf of the collective group. We do partner with an organization out of Chicago, Captive Resources, that actually manages the captive day-to-day and negotiate some of those contracts. And they have an affiliate, Kensington Management, based out of the Cayman Islands, that does some of that work as well, particularly in the investment work down there.
Gotcha. So you guys do the heavy lifting in terms of putting it together, but the day-to-day is handled by somebody else.
That's correct. And I don't want to diminish our partners.
No, not at all.
So
they do important work.
Yeah, they do heavy lifting as well. It's lots of heavy lifting to go around.
It's different heavy lifting.
That's exactly right. I mean, if I could just dial it back a little bit, and take a step back, bigger picture. You know, the reason I really enjoy this, Ben, is because I believe in it. It works. I was a standard middle market broker for a large bank-owned insurance agency for a while. I did well, but I was more or less, kind of pushing the same products into the marketplace as every other competent broker was. Several years ago, I got introduced to captives, and it kind of brought me back to a moment early in my my professional career. I'm going to take you way back, Ben. When I was 11 years old, I began delivering newspapers in Allentown, Pennsylvania. The local paper paid carriers a fixed amount based on how many papers you delivered on your route.
Sure.
So it wasn't hourly, but it was a fixed compensation you're getting. However, it didn't take long for me to figure out, you know, there's things I can do to do better and to differentiate myself from the last carrier, or the carrier over in the next block the neighbors are talking about, to maybe generate a little bit more in tips or just gain more satisfaction from the job. So when it was raining, you know, I began placing my papers in plastic bags instead of just throwing them on the porch. If I was delivering to an elderly couple, I'd place the paper in between the storm door and the front door so they physically don't have to walk outside when it's cold. When I'm doing my collecting, I hang out and listen to people, retired people, talk about their day and just be there a little bit more. I think I carried that experience and those values with me into my insurance career, and the opportunity to really bring value to our clients and deliver something that may or may not be a fit, but really does add significant value to the lives and to their businesses. something meaningful to me, and that's where a lot of the satisfaction in this work comes from. It's tough out there. You know, there's an education curve, and you have to spend a lot of time working with folks. You end up saying, no, not now, maybe in a couple of years down the road. But where it fits, there's a lot of value. And the way it's structured, there really isn't much risk. You know, if we do a good job of vetting you and we determine the captive's a fit, everyone's going to have a bad year once in a while, but you're really going to do well. And over time, you know, turn this cost, this expense, into a little bit of a revenue center for your organization. While you improve and do a better job of delivering on safety and risk management for your employees.
Well, let's leave it there because we're running out of time, but I think that that's a great place to stop. Now, I want to make sure people can get a hold of you, and I'm going to put this in the show notes, and the show rebroadcast on Friday at 10 o'clock at yourlivingbrand.live, but your website is vfcadvisors.com. That's Valley Forge Captive Advisors. .com, and I'll make sure that that's there. And there's a great video on the homepage for people to look at. But Damien, thank you very much for being part of the audience. We're just going to go out commercial. I'll come back. I'm going to say a few words, say goodbye to everybody, and then we're done for another week.
Ben, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for being part of the show.
This is Ben Baker of the You're Living Brand.live show. On K4HD Radio, we'll be right back.
The Your Living Brand Show is brought to you by Your Brand Marketing. Did you know that the world views your brand not as you desire, but as it relates to them? That's why you need to communicate your brand. Tell a story. Win loyalty. Your Brand Marketing helps you reach that goal. It's time to stop being a commodity and instead be a brand worth loving. It's time to contact Your Brand Marketing. Please visit www.powerfulpersonalbrands.com. Download a free chapter of the book on personal branding. That's www.powerfulpersonalbrands.com. Download your free copy now.
Welcome back to K4HD Radio. This is Ben Baker, and this is the Your Living Brand.live show.
And we're back. And the one piece that I took from Damien, I mean, he impacted a lot of information, and I'm going to go back and I'm going to re-listen to this myself. But the one thing I got from him is there's always a different way. It doesn't matter what you do in life. Whether you own a company, whether you're part of a company, whether it's your personal life or your corporate life, there's always a different way. There's always a different way of looking at things. There's always another answer. And it's a matter of taking the time and making the effort to take a look and sit there and say, is there a different way for me to do this particular task? And the answer is usually yes. It may not be one that's viable for you. It may not be one that's right for you at the moment. It may not be one that's cost effective. But we need to take the time to explore it. We need to take the time to explore, you know, just because we've always done things a certain way, do we always have to continue to do things the same way? Or can we take a look and sit there and say, is there a different, more creative way to use the effort and, you know, use the resources that I have and the effort that I have in order to be more efficient? And more efficient is not always more cost effective. You know, just because something's cheaper doesn't make it the right solution. You need to take a look at the human factors. How does this affect the people around me? How does this affect, you know, not only my employees, but my vendors, my customers, people that are potential customers, and my brand? How are people going to view me if I make this change? And it may be a positive thing or it may be a negative thing, but we need to take the time and look at this and sit there and say, am I making the right decision? Look at all the factors. Take a look at not only the dollars and cents, but the humanity along with making that decision. It's not always the right decision to do something just because it's more cost effective, or it's the technological solution, or it's because what everybody else is doing. we need to look and see what's best for us and what's best for our companies and what's best for the people that, you know, engage with our companies and the people that trust us. So once again, this has been Baker. This has been the Your Living Brand Live Show. I'm going to be away for the next 3 or 4 weeks. I'm hopefully heading to Australia. I'll know very soon, but I pre-recorded some episodes in the meantime. Thank you all for being part of the show. I'll be back in September, and have a great week. And every week, please tune in and listen to the Your Living Brand Live Show at 10 o'clock on the West Coast. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you in September.
This has been the Your Living Brand Live Show. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. My name is Ben Baker, and my company is Your Brand Marketing. We help you to stop being a commodity and instead be a brand worth loving. If you want to communicate more effectively and build influence through trust, contact us at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. But every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, this is the Your Living Brand Live Show. Tune in next week on K4HD Radio when we ask another guest, what's your story? Hey, hey, hey.